Hello, and welcome to Lancaster University's Library Podcast. If you're listening, well done for finding us. My name's Louise Speakman, and I am the Information Specialist here at Lancaster. I have with me Andy Holgate, who is...
I'm a Library Digital Specialist, amongst other things.
Excellent.
Hello, everyone.
He's being very modest, is Andy Holgate. He's actually a published author. He's a motivational speaker, and he's motivated thousands of people across the globe with his story of reaching a goal that seemed to be home. Comfortable talking to all audiences, public, scholarly.
It's a strange word, scholarly, isn't it? It makes me sound intelligent. I don't know if it'll go that far, but yeah.
It's like a tongue twister for me. Scholarly. Yeah,
well, you're from Wigan and I'm from Barrow, so English probably isn't our best language, is it? So,
this is very true. This is very true. Well, I can speak for me. Can't speak for any other Wiganers listening. Andy, as you can tell, brings that honesty and humour to topics that he addresses. His published books are about the Iron Man. Is that right?
Yes, I've written two books about my journey from being very, very unfit to competing in Ironman triathlons around the world. It's been a fascinating journey writing those, and they've been well received by people. They've won national awards. I've had people stop me in the street and at airports who recognise me and thank me. I've had hundreds of emails from people that say it's changed their lives, which is kind of mind-blowing because basically I'm just a bit of a fat lad from Barrow that wrote a book about, you know, trying not to be as fat and then just enjoying a sport. And I've had endorsements from the likes of Alistair Brownlee and other people, and been on TV, been on radio. It's been a fascinating process, yeah.
I think it's quite an achievement, Andy, especially as it was shortlisted for the best new sports writer at the British Sport Book Award.
Yes.
So you've done some book signings and things.
Yeah. So the award for the... if you don't know, the British Sports Book Awards are kind of like the BAFTAs of sports writing. And I was the first non-journalist or professional sportsman to ever get nominated for an award with them, which was amazing. That was back in... I think about 2012, I think. I was up for Best New Sports Writer and had to go to a really swanky black tie do at the Savoy in London. And it was bizarre. I was sat on a table with the head of purchasing for Waterstones and my publisher, David Miller, the professional cyclist. David Beckham was in the room, all these other authors that, you know, my wife came with me and she's not really interested in sport, but is interested in literature. Sebastian Thorkes was there, Nick Hornby was there. It was just like, wow, this was amazing.
These are some names, aren't there? Some names to be going.
And then with my second book, I got a further nomination for Outstanding Sports Writer of the Year, which was amazing. Of course, I didn't win either of the awards, but it was just, you know, phenomenal to get those nominations, and it was justification for the long hours of writing two books that each are 100,000 words whilst working full time and juggling a family. So,
and it's great recognition, it really is, for all of that effort. I think, you know, you're very down to earth and a no nonsense speaker.
Yeah.
Andy has been at Lancaster Uni Library for ever.
Yeah. Part of your fixtures and fittings, I think it's 24 years.
I was going to say 25, so I wasn't far off, was I?
No.
But you've recently, you were faculty librarian for LUMS for a long time, but you've recently got a new role.
Yes.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about your role?
Okay, well, I'm still learning what my role is. Officially, it's a library digital skills developer, and I have a role to upskill library staff in their digital skills. And whether that's helping them produce podcasts, whether that's helping produce videos or designing online tutorials on things like referencing or creative writing or whatever. I'm also kind of project managing the rollout of LinkedIn Learning across this campus, Leipzig and Ghana, which is taking up a lot of my time going and talking to staff about how they can use it. We've not really publicized it with students yet, but that's coming, and that will be a big chunk of my time. We'll be talking to students and maybe teaching them how to use it as well. If you don't know what LinkedIn Learning is, and you're listening to this, it's an online platform that the university here at Lancaster has got access to for all staff and students. And it provides over 18,000 online courses and videos on things from creative through to business, through to well-being, employability, technical, all sorts of stuff. You can find things in there. And it's really kind of useful.
And it can be linked to your LinkedIn profile, is that right?
It can. It can be linked to your LinkedIn profile. So if you have a LinkedIn kind of social media profile, you can link it to your LinkedIn Learning. And when you complete a course, you can publish a certificate there. It will also link you to certain groups that you might be interested in because of the courses that you've done. Now, one thing I should really state, you do not have to have the social media side of things to be on LinkedIn Learning. And there has been some pushback from staff about this because they don't want to have that social media aspect to their lives. And I am fully on board with that. I get that. But the two are very, very separate. I kind of describe it as, you know, you've got a giant panda, you've got a red panda. They share the same last name, for instance, but they're not the same. They're completely different. And that's the case with LinkedIn Learning and LinkedIn.
I think that's a good analogy. So anyone at Lancaster Uni can use LinkedIn Learning? Or?
They can if they are a registered member of staff or a student at the Bielried campus, Leipzig or Ghana. It's not available at other partner institutions.
Okay, thank you for that. So we're going to move on. So you've talked about your role and that it's a new one and that actually you're still getting to grips with that role. So what's the most common misunderstanding about your job?
That's a good question. I guess the most common misunderstanding, well, I think first of all, a lot of people haven't got a clue what I do. And with it being such a new role, it is one that I can make my own and run with. I think even within the team, within the library, there's a misunderstanding of what it is that I actually do. I don't think there's one actual aspect. I think the biggest misunderstanding is probably people might think, oh, he's the LinkedIn Learning person. He only has to look after one thing, whereas the rest of the librarians are looking after multitudes of databases. And they probably think that it's quite not an easy job, but it's quite a quietish job because I'm not student facing. But I can safely say it's very time consuming. It's very... it's very fulfilling, it's very enjoyable, but it's a lot of work and there's a lot of new things for me. I mean, I used to be very student orientated and I still am. I used to be out teaching students, meeting students, and now I'm probably talking more to staff. I'm looking at statistics, I'm looking at data, I'm talking to technical people about how it fits into our systems at Lancaster. And this has been a steep learning curve for me. So yeah, I don't think there's a general misconception or one that stands out, but I think there is a general lack of understanding of what the job is just because it's so new. And I'm still trying to figure out what the job is and how I move it forward.
And I think when you said at the beginning, you know, it's not just one piece of software, actually. I think initially that's what, you know, that was what was understood, but actually it isn't. And I know, you know, when I try and contact you, you aren't busy, you know. So
I always do help you. I always do make time. Let's be honest with that.
I've got to be honest, you do always make time for any of us. But I'm on the other end of the phone a little bit more than others, I think. So what do you reckon your biggest challenge that you're facing right now in your role is?
I think there's two. The biggest challenge is seeing how we grow LinkedIn Learning with staff and students. I mean, as of today, we're up to 20% of people signed up that have looked at it. And we need to convert that into maybe 40%, 50%, but then look at how we get them to engage with the content. We don't want them to just go and look and say, oh yeah, I've had a look. Yeah, it's that sort of thing. We want them to build it into their personal development, whether that is, you know, with staff wanting to know how to do pivot tables in Excel, or whether that's with somebody wanting to know how to use Canva, or a student looking at how to write a CV. It's kind of how do we convert it from people looking to actually using it and making it a worldwide worthwhile investment from the university, because this isn't cheap. And the other thing, the personal challenge for me is, so this week I've been editing videos, and you know, my colleague said, I want this to be next level. So I've literally taught myself from scratch how to use Adobe Premiere Pro. I've learned how to use green screen technology, and knit all that together, put animation in. So I've been learning as I've been doing it. And I love playing around with software. It's kind of what attracted me to this role as well. And it's just been a case of just learning those new skills. And it's challenging to find time to learn the skills to be able to do your job or aspects of your job when there's so much wider stuff that I still need to be doing, like setting up meetings, looking at who's going to be doing what in different aspects of the role that I rely on for support. So yeah, that's kind of challenging, managing my own time and you know, allowing myself to develop.
I think I just want to pick on two points there, yeah, that you've just said. So you said at the moment you've got 20% sign up. Yeah. When did you really start promoting this? And what does 20% equate to in, you know, numbers?
Yeah, okay. So we launched LinkedIn Learning in June, and we had an initial promotional push with a bit in the staff newsletter that goes out every week and on the staff intranet. And we put it on the TV screens in the library and in other places. We've got a slide there and things. And I've been out and talked at different committees to raise awareness. We've done a little bit on social media as well. But that's all we've done. We've not promoted this to students yet at all. And that's something we've been discussing, and it's something that is coming up really rapidly on my agenda. I didn't want to bombard students right at the beginning of the term. I was thinking like from 6 weeks in onwards, we can start talking to them about, you know, have you heard that we've got LinkedIn Learning? You could be using this. You could be, you know, have a look at this. So there will be a promotional campaign coming across social media and maybe working with the Student Union, Career Service and other interested bodies to try and promote this further to students. That's all on the agenda. I mean, the goal for this year is to try and get LinkedIn Learning built into the Lancaster Award here at Bailrig and in Leipzig, and just grow it kind of exponentially as people, you know, become more aware of it. Because I think if I went into Alexander Square with, you know, just interviewed random people, do you know what LinkedIn Learning is? Do you know you've got access to it? I can guarantee that the majority of the students in that square and probably some of the staff wouldn't know that we have. So it's kind of, it's, yes, we launched it. It's a successful launch, but now the hard work starts in having to, you know, raise awareness and get people using it.
You can make a lot of money, you know, doing that kind of research in Alexander Square. You could save a fortune on surveys.
I'm really not a researcher. I like to help people. I'll leave the research to those that are that way minded.
But you know, and I think it's a valid point where you're saying, wait 6 weeks. You know, students get so much information at the beginning, so they're a bit settled. So yeah, I think it's the timing is really important, isn't it, for something like this?
Yeah, the timing is vital. We've learned this as librarians here at the university over the years that, you know, we get asked to do inductions in week one, and we know students have got so much stuff going on that they don't take it all in. So when we go back and see them, you know, in week eight or week nine or term two, they're actually paying more attention because they realise the value of the library then, and it's not just something else that they've got to learn that week whilst they're thinking, right, well, you know, I've got a football match or football tryouts at 3 o'clock, or, you know, this film society, I've got to go and see a meeting about them, or I've got to go and talk to my tutor. Library really in the first week of term is not the highest thing on a student's agenda. We know that. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's more a point of need, isn't it? And second question, second bit that I picked up on was the learning. So both you and I are in new roles at the minute. And that learning is something I think that comes with a new role.
Yeah.
How are you determining what you need to learn, or is it just on a day-to-day basis?
I'm making it up as I go along. It's worked for 24 years. Now, it's a sort of very interesting question. I think I know I've had to learn the systems for LinkedIn Learning and the back office and all that. That's from day one. The other stuff, like the video things that are coming up, I was kind of aware that I would have to learn that. So, you know, I knew that was coming, but it's a case of having to learn it. I thought I'd learn it ahead of time and be up to speed, and it just doesn't work like that. It's kind of learning things as I go. And I'm fine with that. I'm really okay with that. I think longer term, I need to get better at managing my workload and saying, right, this is protected for learning a new skill each week. And whether that be on LinkedIn Learning or whether that just be playing with it and trying what I'm supposed to be doing with the software and getting it to work. But again, it depends entirely on the people that I'm helping. I mean, you know, this instance for this week, I was helping a faculty librarian with editing a video. Next week, it might be, you know, editing a podcast for you, or it might be helping some frontline staff with producing an online induction for library staff or for students, or it could be all sorts of different software that I'm, you know, I need to learn or upskill on. So I think this job is the biggest undertaking I've done in 24 years here, and I don't say that lightly, because I had to earn a hell of a lot when I went from service desk member of staff to a faculty librarian, or a subject librarian as we were known back then, and I had to learn all that subject knowledge about being a business librarian. I think that's nothing in comparison to the stuff that I'm learning now, because I'm not a computer graduate. I'm not a computer specialist. I'm self-taught in any software or hardware that I've used over the years. And it's kind of just taking that forward and running with it, really.
Oh, but you sound good at it.
Thank you. Checks in the post, Louise.
Thanks. And I think sometimes, though, and it's like anything, isn't it? You don't know it until you need it.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, it is a point of need. I know I've done an awful lot of reading in this new role already.
Yeah.
And I get asked questions where I think, oh, I don't know, but I'll find out, you know, because that's yeah. Part and parcel of a new role, isn't it? And learning and adjusting. But I also think where you're saying about the time management, that's something that I think will possibly come with time. When things are a bit more settled, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, and say like this week, harping on about this, I've learned new skills this week with video editing and stuff, and now I have those skills. It will take me less time to do that next time I know what I'm doing. And that's part and parcel of learning and growing into any role, whether it's this one. It's interesting that you're saying that, you know, we sometimes think, we don't know the answer to that, but I think that's a skill that librarians have. They go, well, okay, I don't know the answer to that, but I know where to find it. And that's the beauty of being a librarian, although technically I'm not a librarian anymore by job title.
Well, neither of us are.
Neither of us are, but we always will be, yeah.
Trained and professionals. Yeah. So I'm going to move on. So at what time of day? So I work best in the morning.
Yeah.
I do the gym in the morning.
Yeah.
I am most productive in the morning.
Yeah.
When do you get your best work done?
Mornings. I am useless after 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
If it gets to 9 o'clock at night, I'm a zombie. This morning, for instance, I was up early. I was in work. I was in the office at 7 o'clock editing. I'm not saying that to go, oh, look at me, I'm wonderful. Yeah, great. I'll finish early today. Don't worry about it. It's the time balances out. I'm a big on, you know, work-life balance. But I did my best thinking in the morning and just get on. I've always been a morning person, and that applied to my training when I was training for Ironman. I didn't want to interfere with family life, so I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go and do 2 hours on the bike or go for a 2 hour run. My wife describes me as one of the most annoying people in the world, because in the morning I can just get straight up, straight out of bed and go and do something. Whereas it takes her about 3 hours to put slippers on and make a cup of tea. Whereas at night she functions and I'm useless. So that's probably why we're a good partnership.
Yeah, and you go yin and yang.
Yeah.
My daughter calls it defrosting in the morning. I'm a bit like you. I get up and I go to the gym. I don't give my brain time to click that it's going to the gym. You know, it's two legs. I'm already there. But my daughter calls it defrosting. She needs to defrost in the morning.
It's a really good phrase, yeah.
So my last question to you, Andy, on this podcast today is, what occupation, other than your own, would you like to try?
Ooh, that's a good one. This is a strange one. I always, when I was younger, and I still would love to be, I always wanted to be a marine biologist specializing in sharks.
Wow.
Sharks are my favorite animal, and I've been lucky enough to dive with them in the Barrier Reef and go cage diving with great white sharks in South Africa. And I always wanted to be that. And then I went to, I think it was University of Manchester, and talked to them there. And I needed chemistry, and I hated chemistry, and I changed career direction. Not into being a librarian. I never, ever wanted to be a librarian. My best friend at university is actually a business librarian in London, and she always wanted to be a librarian, and I took the mickey out of her all through university. She wanted to be a librarian, and I didn't. I wanted to be a teacher or something else, and I got accepted on a teacher training course at St. Martin's College, which is now University of Cumbria, just down the road. And there was a twice-yearly intake, and I was in the second one, and I needed a job to try and fund that. So I took a part-time job at the library in Barrow as a local studies assistant, because my degree was in history and I'd done a module on local history. And went there, fell in love with the job, and within 3 weeks I persuaded the county council to pay for me to go to Manchester to do my librarian master's, and the rest is kind of history.
I think certainly our team, I think quite a few of us have fell in to being a librarian. Yeah. I don't know if it is at the top of anyone's list. Yeah. But I think we fell into it somewhat.
It is a rewarding job.
It's an excellent job.
We've got an amazing team here at Lancaster, and the library obviously wins awards, and you yourself have won awards for your systematic review stuff. We've actually got the award on the desk in front of us, guys.
We have
sat
not.
Here polishing it. Being a librarian is great, and I got into the job of being a librarian because I love helping people, and I'm hoping to continue that in this job. I want to help my fellow librarians create world-class resources, and I want to help students and staff make the most of those world-class resources that we've got access to, like to LinkedIn Learning as well. And I'm sure being a car salesman for LinkedIn Learning now. But guys, if you haven't signed up for LinkedIn Learning, check it out. Go onto Ask and search for LinkedIn Learning. It'll take you to the pages. It'll take you to the link. Go and have a look. It's really worth at least 5 minutes of your time, if not a lot more.
So I just want to thank Andy for his time today.
Thank you for having me.
It's been nice. It's been interesting. I sit across from Andy, when I'm in the office anyway, when we're both in the office.
Yeah.
And I think I've learned more in the last 20 minutes than I have in 2.5 years. So
I don't know what that says about our relationship, Louise.
It's work-based.
True.
So thank you very much, Andy.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and we will speak to you again very soon.